To be a serial killer surely requires some degree of insanity. I think the act of repeated, calculated murder is something a healthy mind would always reject. But there are serial killers who go beyond even this, whose terrifying madness leads them to acts that are not only monstrous, but almost inhuman. In today's video, we'll be exploring two terrifying cases of cannibalistic serial killers. Alonzo Robinson. Alonzo Robinson isn't likely a name that you will be familiar with, but he was actually one of the USA's most unbridled cannibal killers in the early 1900s. Born sometime in 1895 in Cleveland, Mississippi, little is known about Alonzo's upbringing, other than that he came from an impoverished background. As an adult, he was 6'4" and 240 pounds, making him a rather intimidating figure who had an ideal build for someone who wished to bring violence on other people. However, he did not start off as a serial killer. In fact, Alonzo was first arrested in 1918, age 23, for mailing obscene letters to a local woman. However, he managed to escape while on his way to jail, although he sustained a bullet injury to his shoulder in the process. Several years afterwards, in 1926, Alonzo used an alias, James H. Coyner, to move to Ferndale, Michigan. Shortly after his arrival, however, the bodies of decapitated women began turning up around the city. Authorities immediately suspected the new town resident, but didn't have enough evidence to prove it was him. By 1927, Alonzo was convicted and imprisoned at Indiana State Penitentiary in Michigan City, Indiana, for stealing the corpse of a young girl from a local graveyard. While in prison, he was questioned about the case of the decapitated women, but responded only with the words, "I could tell you a lot of things you'd like to know, a lot of things about murders and murderers, but I'll die first." After 8 years in prison, Alonzo was paroled in June of 1934. From here, he returned to Cleveland, Mississippi, and continued to write obscene letters. The exact details of these letters have never been revealed. One of these letters was mailed to a woman in Indianapolis, but while it was being investigated by local postal workers, Alonzo had already moved on and taken the lives of two more people. On December 9th of 1934, he broke into the home of Aurelius B. Turner, his pregnant wife, and their two children. Mr. Turner was reading a newspaper while sitting in a chair when he was struck by a hammer and shot. According to Alonzo, he struck Mrs. Turner about 5 times. He then mutilated both corpses and took some of Mrs. Turner's flesh. According to some reports afterwards, he struck one of the children over the head and left them for dead, but the other child, in the crib, was left unharmed. Just over 1 month later, on January 12th of 1935, Alonzo was arrested by Shaw, Mississippi authorities, who traced his letters to his post office box. While he attempted to reach for his gun, he was overpowered by deputies, and ultimately, the 40-year-old killer surrendered. Searching his pockets, officers found more obscene letters and Mr. Turner's pocket watch. Even more grim was the discovery of a packet of human hair, the same color as Mrs. Turner's, plus human flesh that had been salted and cured and had bite marks on. Following his arrest, Alonzo was questioned once again about the decapitated women who were found in Ferndale. This time, the questioning came because authorities had uncovered a trunk belonging to him in Ferndale, which had contained the heads of 4 women. The 40-year-old freely admitted that the trunk was his, but denied the killings, claiming that he'd taken the heads while he'd been grave robbing. Alonso was also questioned about the murder of the Turners. He admitted to being responsible for this too, and told authorities he had an impulse to kill somebody. Flesh from Mrs. Turner was reportedly later found in Alonso's house. After a one-day trial, Alonso was sentenced to death. His charges included cannibalism as well as murder. He was then sent to a jail in Jackson, Mississippi for safekeeping, where he was guarded by 200 men. On March 5th of 1935, at Bolivar County Jail, Alonso was executed by hanging. Between 200 and 300 National Guardsmen stood outside the jail as the events occurred. Reportedly, Alonso grinned as the hood and noose were put over his head. We will likely never know Alonso's true death count, nor how far his cannibalism went. His case is difficult to research and not well known, leaving much of his life and crimes a mystery. Still, the brazen way in which he carried out his crimes makes him a terrifying killer, despite us likely never knowing the full extent of his horrifying legacy. Karl Denker. The moniker "The Cannibal of Jenbite" probably doesn't mean much to you. That's because the story of Karl Denker has largely been forgotten about and has, on the whole, been poorly recorded over time. Even the birthday of the serial killer is up for debate, with most sources agreeing that he was born on August 12th of 1870, although some sources claim as different as 10 years, putting the date of February 11th, 1860. Little is known about Karl's upbringing. He was born to a rather well-off family of German farmers in what is now known as Jenbite, Poland. But he was known to be different from his siblings, as he often didn't speak and was considerably less intelligent. He also misbehaved frequently and was seen as a handful. After completing his primary school education at 12 years old, Karl fled his family and home life and was taken under the wing of a gardener who took him on as his apprentice. Karl's father passed away when he was 25 years old. His older brother inherited the family home, and Karl received a sum of money, which he used to buy a piece of land. He aimed to carry on the family tradition and become a farmer, but swiftly failed. So he sold the land and bought a house on Stawała Street. However, it wasn't long before Karl had to sell this too, due to inflation. Instead, he moved into a small apartment next to the house's ground floor and began renting it. As for his work, Karl ran a shop nearby where he sold meat. He also reportedly sold leather goods such as suspenders and belts, as well as laces, something he did door to door. By all accounts, Karl was widely accepted and liked by his local community of about 8,000 people. He was respected, devout, and peaceful. He volunteered as a crossbearer and organist at his local Lutheran church, and was referred to as Papa by locals, although he later quit his church in 1906. He was not known to socialize with women, avoided alcohol, and would often offer work and lodgings to beggars and travelers. When he could, Karl would travel to what is now known as Wrocław, where he was licensed to sell pork products at the city markets. He would sell them as boneless, pickled meat in jars, and overall, his goods were very popular, and Karl did well financially. As for his family, they did not often see him, but later noted that he was somebody who never showed fear or disgust, and that he had no violent temper that they had noticed. It seemed for anyone who knew Karl that he was not the type of man who would do anything violent. And yet, here we have a serial killer. The details of when Karl began his spree are hazy. Some articles have said he only killed for around 4 years, while others place his first murder somewhere either in 1903 or 1909. In 1903, a woman named Ida Lorner went missing. For some, she is Karl's first victim. In 1909, he killed 25-year-old Emma Sander. Some sources believe this to be his first murder. Either way, someone else was actually arrested and charged with Emma's murder, another slaughterhouse worker named Edward Troutman, although he was later released when the connection was made between Emma and Carl. By all accounts, most of the Slayer's victims were either homeless vagrants or poor travellers. Essentially, people with no one to report them missing, and people whose disappearance would go unnoticed. Little else is documented about Carl's victims after the case of Emma Sander. On December 20th or 21st of 1924, a homeless man named Vincent Olivier managed to escape an attempt on his life made by Carl, who slashed the man's scalp with a pickaxe. There are two versions of this story. Either Vincent went straight to the police station, covered in blood, to report the crime, or his screams were heard by a neighbor of Carl's, who went to investigate. The neighbor then found Vincent hurrying along the hallway before collapsing, and the authorities were contacted. Either way, the homeless man pointed the finger at Carl, who claimed that he had only attacked Vincent in self-defense as he attempted to rob him. Still, Carl was taken in for questioning and was placed in a holding cell. 2 days later, he hanged himself. After his demise, Carl's home was searched, leading officers to find a ledger which contained the names of his victims. They also found body parts, and lots of them. The collection was made up of both bones and flesh, including ribs, toe bones, and shin bones. Some articles likened his home to a makeshift meat processing factory. 240 human teeth were recovered from the scene, as well as tubs of fat, dehydrated skin, and blood-stained clothing. This led to the belief that Carl had actually sold parts of his victims through his shop to the unsuspecting public. It is also believed that the laces Carl sold were made from human hair. Carl's ledger revealed a lot to authorities. He had at least 30 victims. However, contrary to the 30 names in the ledger, the amount of body parts found in the home suggested that there were at least 40 victims, possibly more. Even today, the extent of his crimes are still unknown, as the true number of victims has never been discovered. Not only is his lifestyle still shrouded in mystery, but his motives and methods behind the violent crimes are too. The only known image of Carl was taken after his death. In the months following the discoveries made in his flat, the town residents were shocked and scared. They were afraid to eat meat, to the point that a few meat canning factories and processing plants were shut down. In the decades after the heinous crimes were discovered, more body parts were found on the property, specifically under the garden shed. Today, the building where Carl lived still stands, although his gruesome story has largely faded from the minds of the public. And there you have the facts. Please leave a comment down below with your own thoughts and reactions, and remember to like this video and subscribe to support the channel. You can also support us on Patreon for as little as $2 each month. Thank you for watching. Stay alert, stay safe, and I'll see you next time.